Good morning and good afternoon and good evening to each and every one of our merry Marvelites. Welcome to Marvel Movie Talk right here on Geekscape. As always, I am Christian Blatt, and today it's going to be a little bit of Marvel book talk as we discuss Look Out for the Little Guy, Scott Lang's book that we're also well aware of and we've been looking forward to for months, really. With me, as usual, Eric Connor. Hello, sir.
Hello. Pleasure to see both you fine gentlemen. Rob, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry Scott was a little occupied tonight, but maybe he'll call in later.
He's busy. Yeah.
He's going to be busy. Yeah. But we appreciate Rob Cutner for taking his time out of his busy schedule, wherever he is out in the world. For those who don't know, Rob gets some very nice mentions in the book. What is it, like page 3? We see your name. You are officially with Rob Cutner in this book, and he does give you a nice thank you. Scott Lang does in the afterword. Let's talk a little bit about getting to be the guy who helped Ant-Man tell his story, you know?
Yeah, just to be clear, like, I'm not with him like the way Hope is, you know?
No, I don't think ever, you know, it's
see where the week takes you.
Yeah. Well, no. And also, you know, you're not part of, you know, the ant army or anything like that. You're just collaborator, very strictly professional, you know,
it's only because they couldn't think of an ant pun for my name. I think that's the only reason I wasn't submitted it to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They didn't, I guess, any Anthony's or, you know, someone with the last name Gant, you know, any of that. They were like, no, you know what? Let's just
Christian Blant, almost.
Oh, that would have worked.
Christant?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Instead, they were just like, you know who can be the best collaborator with Scott Lang? A guy who has spent a lot of his career writing comedy for television. And, you know, you might not have been who I would have said, Stephen Strange is writing a book. Let's send Rob over there. I'd probably say somebody else. But it seemed like Scott Lang and you were a great fit in the way that that his story and his outlook blended together in this book.
Well, thanks. I mean, basically what happened was, I'm not allowed to speak about all of it, but basically there was an interview process,
you know,
with authors. And I was drawn to this, and I think they were drawn to me because the people at Hyperion Avenue who put the book out, because I think largely because he's a dad with a teenage daughter, which I also have.
Yeah.
Cassie, of course. And I have a 15-year-old daughter now. And, you know, also like has been through a couple of stages of life, not as many dramatic stages as he's been through, of course. But, you know,
you know, Rob, your record's been expunged, so we actually don't have to talk about the hard time that you did.
Listen, those years I spent in the raft were they're still traumatizing for me.
Right. Yeah. So
I think he has, like, you know, Scott has such an interesting perspective on a lot of things that I think is really different than a lot of the other superheroes in the MCU, just because he was, you know, sort of a kind of a geeky, you know, really sort of every man who faced some moral dilemmas and, you know, has had some very dramatic, you know, shifts in his life and all that stuff. And still kind of not really, even though he's like very confident about his powers and you know, he did, oh, by the way, save the universe. You know, I think he's very like down to earth about it and very low key about the whole superhero thing. And so, you know, I think that was sort of a vibe that I guess he picked up for me, and wanting to just sort of like, you know, share life wisdom with people and a little corny, like I am, you know, dad jokes and all that sort of stuff. So I think that was just a fit, a good fit in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think anybody who has, you know, seen Scott in the Ant-Man movies or the various Avengers and other, you know, he was in Captain America movie, you just really get a good sense that I don't, you know, obviously he's a superhero who, as you pointed out, saved the world, but he still manages to have an everyman quality that not necessarily everybody has, you know. And you know, sometimes you might find that with, you know, in movies or TV or anything, characters who are younger, but he's really just a guy who's like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. You know, there's really those moments, you know, in where it's like, yeah, that's how I would feel. I mean, I don't think I would survive even, you know, shrinking once with one Pym particle, but, you know, just sort of getting the feeling. So, Eric, I know you have also read Look Out for the Little Guy. And I wanted to give you... Oh, see, look at that. And look, these are two hard copies. These were both purchased. No, hey, can anybody slip me a you know, a publisher's digital copy? So we were happy to do our homework for this. And Eric, I wanted to give you a chance to kind of, well, just share some of your thoughts on the book with Rob and our audience.
Sure. Well, one thing I really enjoyed up front, and it really, this was like the first several chapters of this book, was like the life lessons. I found that actually, dare I say, moving. Like, you know, your work with Scott, you know, I feel like you found a way to sort of do a book that almost comes close to being self-help, but never in a way that felt preachy or cheesy. And some of this, even for me, as I'm reading it, like there was the idea of like, how did Scott kind of go through 2 years of house arrest? And there's a whole chapter about sort of almost like life hacks for dealing with that. And I was curious, like, you know, for yourself, Rob, and your work on this book, like, did this come, like, was any of this something you did during COVID, as far as these like life lessons you guys included in this book? Just kind of curious, what was the trigger for that? Was that part of your pitch, even when you were going to work with him, as far as like, this might be an interesting angle to take the book?
Yeah. It's so funny because, you know, all that stuff that happened to him, before, you know, the civil war for that civil war was, yeah, it was before all the COVID stuff, but yeah, the book was, a lot of it was written during that. And I think I really, I really related to that, because, you know, I have two kids, the teens are in the little one, and it's like, just finding things to, you know, Christian, I know you do well. So, you know, finding stuff to do with them when you're just trapped.
Yeah. And, you know, just, for the way of explanation, Eric also has, two kids. You've got, two boys. And,
oh my gosh. You know, all the more so, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. And, you know, my kids were little, you know, my son was 5 and my daughter was like 2.5. So it was a little bit easier in some ways, but it was a lot harder in others, you know. And it was an interesting time in the sense that basically right when my son discovered maps in the globe and wanted to travel the world, it was like, yeah, so we can't leave Burbank, specifically like this half mile. So,
Maps and Google Earth. And my God, it's like, you're actually there.
Right. Exactly.
It's just nice because it's like, I think Scott learned this too. And I think just like looking back on it, like, you know, he tries to find a positive in everything, even that was one of the less harrowing things, but he tries to find a positive in everything, which I think is sort of like kind of a way, as much a part of his heroism as the actual like physical daring do he does, just to like turn some of the shit the world throws at you into like, oh, well, I can, except for he doesn't actually like lemons and lemonade, but you know,
nor do the ants.
No, ants definitely don't, but maybe he really identifies with them. But I think that was one of the things about COVID is like looking back on it now, of course, you know, not counting all the people who died and are suffering long COVID, but, you know, those of us who had the sort of humdrum existence and going through it, just like there was a lot of silver linings to it, like that you can find if you're willing to look for them. So getting creative about entertaining your kids. Christian, you'll appreciate this. My wife, Cheryl, who you work with.
Sure.
That's how we know each other. We had Mother's Day during COVID, and the kids and I came up with this idea, which was sort of reminiscent, I think, of what Scott did with Cassie. We're creating all these worlds out of cardboard boxes for her, you know, as we saw in the movie as well. But like, so we created a whole like tour of LA for my wife for Mother's Day inside the house of all her favorite places. So like, we made a little Trader Joe's, we made a little Pete's Coffee sign in front of the coffee maker, and we like took her on the tour. The kids put like animals out in one of their rooms, and it was the LA Zoo, where they printed out the logos of all these places. The best was we did the Griffith Observatory, and we went into a closet and did one of those pinhole cameras with like stars and a thing, and like played a little, like we made a recording of like one of those little audio shows you'd have about like, you know, the stars above us, all that stuff. So like, we just tried to recreate sort of a little world inside our home, which, you know, which you think is sort of what Scott was doing with Cassie during that time as well. And then also the stuff about like, you know, staying in better contact with people. I think like, he was sort of like so physically sequestered that he like made an effort to like reach out to all these people that he'd met, like the superhero world and, you know, Luis and everybody and all these people. Like, he made more of an effort. Like, we in our modern urban life get so wrapped up in like the stuff that we stop making contact with people. You have to work at it. It's work to like keep your friendship networks going, I think. We're all really busy. So that sort of being stuck in one place, like kind of like focuses efforts on like, you know, reconnecting with people and making that more of a deliberate choice in his life, which I think is something that a lot of us were like, you know, a lot of people were doing family Zooms like I was doing, or maybe reaching out to people internationally and like making more connections, or even activities we normally did in person, like you would do now, you would sort of do with people across the country that you might know. You might like I started a book group with, you know, some friends of mine, four different cities. So, I mean, those are some, if you can say like positive things that came out of the experience of being confined.
Yeah, no. And the interesting thing was, you know, sort of the advent of platforms like Zoom or StreamYard, which we're using right now, I found myself streaming a lot more because it was a great way to connect with people. And, you know, the reach was there. There was an audience that was like, oh, hey, this is happening. And I also found that a lot of authors, musicians, comedians, everybody was available, you know.
It was
like you'd reach out to publicists and be like, oh yeah, they can't do that day, all right, but when can they do? Oh, you know, like the next day, you know, because it was like,
that's awesome,
nobody was going anywhere. And so I really started doing a lot more in the townhouse I was living in at the time. There was, in the back of the garage, there was this soundproof room, which we affectionately and jokingly, as far as the authorities are known, called the murder room, because you couldn't hear anything from outside that door. And it was perfect for podcasting, except for the fact that it was, you know, very dark. But we worked it out. And yeah, it's obviously the advantage, of course, is that we were allowed to leave the house. We just weren't really supposed to, you know, go to fun places, but yeah, we would take the kids out and walk. And it's funny that you talk about Mother's Day, because you reminded me, I'd forgotten that we did this, that Mother's Day 2020. I thought that the gift that I could give my wife was to give her some time alone in the house while also picking up some delicious home style cooking. So I drove out to Rialto and got Cracker Barrel to go, because that was the closest one. And, you know, at that point, just a couple months into COVID, I think I got to Rialto in like 40 minutes. So, you know, it still was pretty good. And the kids got a nice long nap. And it's interesting because, you know, I had the same thought Eric did. It just kind of reminded me of like, oh, yeah, you really come up with some ways to be inventive. Now, I did not come up with things like Scott did, which would be, yeah, I think we've done Brinner at home. We've done breakfast for dinner, but I've never done dinner for breakfast. And I feel like I'm missing out. Maybe, as you know, I guess as a younger man, you have
cold. You never had a morning steak?
No. Well, steak and eggs, I guess, is a thing, but I don't know. I love that idea, you know? And it's like, because if you can have cold pizza, why can't you have warm lasagna for breakfast? These are the questions that we have you on to ask, Rob.
So. I think it was also like another thing that I related to about this was, so I don't know if you remember this part of our Deep Cuts with Cheryl. That's a new podcast, Deep Cuts with Cheryl.
Yeah.
my wife. But you remember that
she didn't realize that that was happening, but she's
taken over the
at
podcast.
At least in name, yeah.
But we lived in two different cities for a while. You knew that.
I think it was while she was working with not just with me, but on the Dennis Miller Show. You were doing the Daily Show in New York, right?
That's right. It was the time, right? It was the early 2000s. So we were working in two different cities. I took the job on the Daily Show in New York, and she was quite busy in LA. This is before we had kids, of course. But we were really bi-coastal, and so I had this weird situation because I moved to this tiny little apartment in New York, and suddenly I was like, I'd never lived in New York before, and I'm like this guy working on a pretty hot show, and finally got a steady job and a little cash in my pocket. And I'm like, I'm a guy on my own, but I'm also married, but I'm also like, you know, so I kind of wanted, I could sort of had this sort of late breaking bachelor lifestyle thing come in. And we got married like pretty much close to like, we were sort of living together right out of college and then got married. Yeah. So I never really had that sort of like bachelor period. So now I'm like, you know, in my early 30s and I'm like, well, who says I have to eat, you know, lunch in the middle of the day or dinner at dinner time and that sort of thing. And so there's this whole like inventiveness about your life that I think is also like what was going on during the house arrest.
Yeah. And, obviously the differences between New York and Los Angeles have not been chronicled nearly enough. So I'm going to weigh in with that. But what I did find is, you move out here. I moved out here 20 years ago. Going back to New York, you kind of remember and like, oh, yeah, you can just be really irresponsible because you don't have to drive home. So it's like 3 a.m. and it's like, hey, man, I got to go. Well, shouldn't we get one more pitcher? Well, yeah, obviously we should get one more pitcher of beer, which somehow turns into two. And the next thing you know, it's 4:30. Also, you know, last call not being at 1 a.m. or whatever. So, yeah, I had a stretch where my wife worked on Orange is the New Black and the writer's room was out here, but production was in New York. So they like put her up in near the Flatiron District. Yeah. So she did that a couple of times. She was there for like 6 weeks and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll see you later. Yours was a much longer term thing. I remember that time period. And it's not like, you know, getting trapped in the quantum realm for 5 hours and finding out it was 5 years, but just sort of the idea of disconnect, it seems like it's very relatable. Like, oh, there's, you know, the world didn't stop just because I was in New York, you know, or vice versa, you know. But in any case, I find that obviously whenever you see Scott Lang, you see him in the movies, you see him anywhere. He's a very likable guy. And this just reinforces that, sort of like what you were saying, Eric, you know, some of his observations on life. And I'm like, oh, I was expecting to get a lot of, his perspective on superhero adventures and what's it like to meet the other Avengers. But then there really is like the legitimate life stuff that comes in there that I guess I should have expected it, but I didn't really, you know, and I think that's what you were saying earlier, right, Eric?
Yeah, you pick up this book and, you know, you might expect, oh, it'd be cool to hear Scott Lang's POV of these battles, which is in this book, by the way. And I really, it was interesting because it was like a novelization, but done from an actual character POV, like sharply drawn from a character POV. So you have that, but that's not even what you led with, which I think was such a smart way of organizing a very rich life like Scott Lang's, is this idea of like, well, he's gone through more than most of us. And yet within what he's gone through, like you were just talking about, Rob, you know, we all, over this last few years, especially, have something in here we could relate to. Being a lot of us having to sort of do these, you know, creative ways of just keeping our sanity, or for all of us, all three of us, like making sure our kids were okay amidst all the craziness of the last few years. And by the way, I realize I'm approaching my 20th anniversary next month. Yes. And hearing what you two gentlemen did for Mother's Day makes me think I might not make it to my 21st if Lauren watches this. So, Christian, can you edit out everything that makes you guys look really good husbands?
Just get this down to a 3-minute conversation that makes you look good.
is listen, man, it's October. You've got 7 months to like level up here, right?
Oh, trust me, I've already taken some notes.
Although something tells me that if you know it was a specific time and place, if you sidle up to Lauren and be like, "So, should I go pick up some Cracker Barrel?" She'll be like, "What? Why would you do that? It's so far away."
She would swoon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I would, you know, but yeah, that's. Yeah, I think that I don't know, what was there anything, Rob, that, you know, sort of collaborating on this process, was there anything that pleasantly surprised you? Just something that you weren't expecting, you know, as you were sort of helping to bring Scott's story to the page, as it were?
Well, I think one thing is, I think I was just constantly struck by the sort of, and this is what I think, you know, why I was a good choice for it. If I'm a Zizzle Mizzle, is this like, I mean, you think of him as a funny, you know, he's a funny guy, obviously, very funny guy. But like, it's like some people are funny because they're like, you know, they're making jokes, you know, almost to sort of as a sort of domination thing, or just like, look, I'm the funniest guy in the room. Obviously, Christian, you and I have worked with people like that.
Sure.
Both of us, you know, it's like a power thing. Like, he's doing it because it's like, he's always aiming at himself because he just doesn't take himself that seriously, which I think is like, you know, and like no slag, no shade on any other, the MCU people, like they're all like, you know, obviously very selfless in a certain way, but also they kind of, some of them do kind of take themselves pretty seriously, you know, they would probably wouldn't hire me to do the Steve Rogers book. I'll just put it that way, because they have a certain, and he has a sense of self that's been sort of demolished so many times that he doesn't get attached to any kind of identity about that, and just sort of like lives in the moment. I mean, that's another good thing too. I think like it's kind of funny that someone who's like been so involved with, you know, time in so many different ways, like, is very good about just living in the moment, or maybe as a result of that, who knows? Maybe that's what it is. So that was interesting. And then I think what's interesting too, and you know, to your point about telling the stories, I mean, like, you know, just to be fair, like he wasn't around for a lot of the sort of big events of the Infinity Saga, really. Like, you know, not until that the rat who saved the universe,
yeah,
released him from the van. Yeah. He wasn't around for that stuff. So, you know, I feel like, you know, there's all these sort of quasi historical and biographical things out there where like people really invent things around stuff they didn't see. Like, he was very like, clear about like, I didn't see that. I got stories secondhand from people. And so, you know, that's why you might find that some of the stuff really resembles, you know, what was seen on the screens about these movies, because he was sort of getting the same accounts as a lot of other people. And he wasn't trying to sort of go beyond and just like make up stuff. He wanted to be really, really, really limited to, you know, what he witnessed with his eyes and then just what his really close friends had told him, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's a perfect example of that. It's clearest when he's talking about Natasha, about Black Widow, whom he didn't really know that well. But he's like, here's what everybody else says. And when I got to the couple times I did interact with her, she seemed really cool. And everybody has these great things to say, specifically Hawkeye, who seemed to have known her the longest, you know. So, I believe that if I had been in those situations, I would come off like, oh yeah, I know everything about everybody. And even if like in my head, I knew it was wrong. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I don't even think Black Widow likes peanut butter and jelly. I think she only eats cheese sandwiches, you know? Based on nothing. You know, it's just like, well, why did you lie about that? I don't know. I just needed to seem smart. But, you know, maybe, you know, Scott isn't afraid of not being the smartest guy in the room, which I think is important when you spend so much time in a room with Hank Pym, you know?
Yeah. Who, yeah.
You know, all of us as kids, I think, at least had some familiarity with, you know, stories of Hank Pym as Ant-Man from back in the day. Right. And, you know, Scott seems to be somebody who's like, you know, he's very respectful in the way, but at the same time, it's not, you know, it's not like being starstruck, like, oh, I can't talk to him, you know. And in the book, he talks about how, well, I guess he's not afraid of annoying Hank Pym, right, Rob?
I think he's now reached a place where he feels like a good balance and he feels comfortable around it. I think there was a long time period. I mean, you know, this kind of this is tangled up with, like, you know, it's his girlfriend's dad. So it's like, you've got that whole, like, you know, get away from my daughter, get off my lawn. You got that whole, like, element of, like, I don't want to mess this up, you know? So I think it's, I mean, I think it's so, you know, he's sort of worried about that. And, you know, and there's also this part that, you know, the story he talks about trying to fit in different times of his life. Like, you know, he went to MIT. He's a smart guy. He was around a lot of smart people, and he was kind of a smarty pants, you know, he says early on. And
yeah,
he's such a good, like, relator to people and has good intuitive skills that he picked up on. Like, after a while, he's like, you know what? People don't like that. People don't like you when you try to be the smartest person in the world. And I want people to like me. He really wants people to like him. So he stopped making that so important. I think the way some people kind of just keep going, plowing ahead with that, like, especially like online, right? Like, you know, on social media, like, I'm just going to show that I'm the smartest person. And ironically, those people usually are the opposite of that. Once you're trying the hardest. I think he's someone who, like, and to go back to the Natasha thing, I think he's someone who sort of appropriately balances the heart and the mind. Like, he values the heart and the mind both. And he sort of leads with his heart when his mind, he realizes his mind's limits, even though his mind is very smart. He sort of just goes where his heart tells him to go, I think, which is also another kind of, like, part of his heroism.
Well, yeah. I think that's, one thing I was just going to say, you might hear my own animals off camera here.
That's a terrible way to talk about your children, Eric.
You've met them, no, it's not.
We saw one actually cross frame before, I believe.
Oh yeah, no. He likes to do at least one cameo per podcast episode. Yeah. You know? It's the Alfred Hitchcock sort of cameo he does. As a character, I think what's so interesting about Scott, so fun, is, like, he's always taken down a peg. Like, mm-hmm. you know, kids don't necessarily ask for his signature. He gets an award, but it's from Baskin Robbins as the employee of the century. Yeah, so yeah. I feel like with that, although I could imagine if I had a card that allowed me to have Baskin Robbins every day, I imagine he does now, that could change a lot of things in my life. Not in a good way at all, right. though. So it seems like built into him, and why he was the right guy to you know, have this point of view of the story, is that he is maybe the one we can see ourselves the most in of all the Avengers. You know, that he doesn't necessarily get the accolades. He doesn't have, you know, the Tony Stark amount of fans and you know, hanger on. So I think he was the perfect guy to then do this. And I imagine for you then, you know, bringing in your own personal, you know, story, like the idea of your own experience as a parent, as a partner, you know, and having an intelligent partner, you know, who's also creative, like that's the rub of him, right? It's like his partner is, well, the Wasp. So there's definitely a sort of a balance in that family, and it's a lot to live up to, I imagine, for both of you guys, right? To be the parent, to be also like two careers in New York and LA and all that. Yeah. So I could see the parallels to Scott and yourself, Robert.
Yeah, that's true. This is so interesting. I never really thought about this deeply about it, but yeah, for sure. When you have like your significant others in the same field as you are, and you're both doing, and in fact, we were sort of writing partners for a while. And then I think we just realized we had different sensibilities, you know, and wanted to do different things, but there's like that balance, you know, of like, how do you just like, how do you balance like the sort of conflicts that come up in everyday life in a relationship with the ones that in your professional endeavors, and not sort of like mix the two up, and like you're resentful about one thing, and so you bring it to the other realm, and like, so you have to like, you have to learn to navigate that stuff. It's like a whole set of different methods, and kids definitely take you down a peg, I think, for sure, because it's like anything you thought you knew about yourself, you know, or you knew how to do, like they sort of expose, like, you know, when they start asking questions of like, you know, age 3 and 4 and 5, and like, oh, I only know the answer to a couple of those questions. Like, you've already plumbed the knowledge of science that I have. It can be very humbling for sure.
You're not Giant Man then, you're Ant Man for them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Why don't you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like kind of like those moments where, you know, your kids ask you something and you're like, you figure out like the most creative way to say, I have no idea what that is. And then they sort of look as like, but daddy, don't you know everything? And I'm like, oh no. I just tell your mother that I know everything, but it's actually not at all true. I don't want to ask you the loaded question, Rob, of who your favorite Avenger is, because we know that now it would of course be Scott Lang, Ant-Man. But prior to this project, who were you most sort of fascinated by? And maybe it's somebody that, you know, you learn more about during this project and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, it's really cool to hear about, you know, about Hulk or Thor or anybody. Was there somebody that, you know, going again, prior to getting to work with Scott Lang, was there somebody that you were particularly interested in finding out more about?
Well, actually, I would say my favorite Avenger is technically MODOK for 5 seconds before he dies.
That's right. I forgot that. Yeah, he does get a few minutes in there. Yeah.
I was going to say, Rob, I hope you're writing his book next.
Oh my God,
we're writing his book. Although, I mean, I guess he couldn't really do much writing at this stage.
Well, it's
maybe he can't do much with those baby arms. He can't do really
anything at all. Well, he's definitely going to need somebody to take dictation if it were to happen. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a good question. I'll say that, like, I don't know if it's just a comedy point of view, but I always just find the whole, I find Bruce Banner kind of interesting because he's like this guy. I have so many friends who are academics and all they are is bitter and angry about academia. And it's ironic. Like, I think I've probably tweeted this joke or something like that, that like the Hulk is really angry because he's like had to defend 7 PhDs, you know, or pay off his grad school loans, you know, it's like this. Like it's funny that he's like this guy who sort of like floats above like all the kind of bullshit of actually being super educated the way he is. And it's just like, he just has all this knowledge and he's just, maybe it's because it's Mark Ruffalo. Oh, well, okay. Anyway,
yeah.
It's the way he comes across. He's very,
yeah. So he comes across very reminiscent of that guy who was in 13 going on 30. I know
Banner
what you're
has
saying.
A Ruffalo. Exactly. Yeah.
Ruffalo-esque. Yeah.
Ruffalo. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Which is like the sort of the opposite of what you think of like the Hulk, you know, and I'm old enough. I think you guys are roughly my age range to remember like the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk. Yeah. Where it was just like, he was always kind of tightly wound anyway, even when he was just Banner. Like, it wasn't like he was like at peace with himself. He was just kind of this like irritated guy who got more angry and got more muscular when he got angry. You know, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Like, that's already kind of like, what's up with that dude? Like, you're just, that's kind of pissy, isn't it? A little bitchy there.
Big talk from a little man.
Right. Yeah. It's not the kind of Hulk that I grew up with. So I think it's like the sort of, we'll say the understanding of Hulk that we have now. And especially now that, you know, he sort of balanced the two parts of himself at all times. And then also, you know, in contrast to, you know, his cousin Jennifer.
Yeah.
You know, she's got a whole different vibe about like about anger and dealing with that. But so I guess I find that intriguing. And you know, also someone who's, you know, I would say struggles with my own anger issues, maybe perhaps around my kids and that sort of stuff as well. And tempers. I think that's sort of something that's in a way kind of more relatable, or at least really, really interesting, relatable to me. Among all those characters, you know, they all have like things that are interesting, but like just on a personal level, like that balance of anger and calm and control. And
yeah, no, I mean the dual nature of the Hulk living with inside. And very recently on the show, just a couple weeks ago, Eric and our other co-host Michael, we were joined by Kenneth Johnson, who he created.
I love that show.
He did the 70s Hulk show. And earlier in the year, I had talked to him about V, which he had created 40 years ago. And then in that conversation, I knew he had done the Incredible Hulk. And I'm like, I just got to focus on V on that. So a few months later, he comes back and we talk about it. And it's just it's always such an interesting, you know, way to look at that character, you know. And he said that it felt like it was Les Miserables, right? Eric, that the idea that he's like on the run and Javert is trying to, you know, find Jean Valjean. And it's just like, oh, it's such a smart intellectual way to look at it. And, you know, I mean, the way that we can look at this in the conversation is, you know, 70s Hulk on TV is a bit of fiction. And then we have our more authentic Hulk in the movies, but the story is always the same and it always works. And it was just so interesting to talk to him. And I mean, this is a guy who was able to tell 85 hours worth of Hulk stories on television, wow. You know, and you know, we barely scratched the surface. So I do agree that that is such an interesting character, and just, you know, getting to see him and sort of the evolution of him. And I know that Scott talks about it in the book, sort of, you know, when he gets to that point where he is now, that he's, you know, smart Hulk all the time, you know, he doesn't go back and forth. He just kind of is Hulk. And, you know, and for as smart as he is, he's nowhere near as good of a lawyer as his cousin, as you mentioned. Yeah. So,
one degree he didn't get to knock it with the JD. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, what I found was interesting was sort of the explanation. I mean, there's really the two chapters in the book where he talks about what Scott Lang talks about what it's like to get really big versus really small. Mm-hmm. And the really big seems like, oh yeah, I mean, that would take like a month to recover from, except like he's telling stories where like I got really big and then I went back to being super small, like, you know, a second later and I had something really important to do. I'm like, oh, it's just exhausting to think about, you know, changing size and all of that. And just, you know, the vantage point of, you know, looking down on something. And then it's like, you know, you're like looking up at a boot and hoping you don't get crushed. You know? So just that perspective. And I don't know. I mean, Scott Lang being somebody who really kind of sees it all from all these different viewpoints, you know.
And really quickly, like switching from one to the other, like you said, like, you know, again, like I think that just sort of speaks to, like, I think this, you know, even though I say he doesn't take himself seriously, he also at the same time has this, like, in the good way, a sort of confidence or a sense of self that enables that to, because like that would just freak a lot of people, myself included, out, I think, to be shifting perspective that. But I think maybe just because he's been buffeted around so much, he's like, I know who I am. I know it's important. You know, spoiler alert, it's Cassie. I know it's most important. I know how close I've come to not having those things. And so if I can hold on to those things, you know, that's, I can hold on to that like all the time. And that's how it doesn't, I don't let the stuff get to me. You know, I don't sweat the small stuff or the big stuff.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, you know, Scott doesn't have unlimited time. So I'm sure part of your preparation for, you know, fleshing this out was actually going back and rewatching the movies. Was it one of those things where you spent weeks like, all right, I'm watching Civil War for the fifth time today. And, you know, and your wife, Cheryl, will come in and be like, really? Again, the airport? Okay, I guess.
Sure. You're writing a book.
Yeah, right. I'm writing a book. Right. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting because I got to where I watched before I even like had the interview for it. Like I watched everything he was in with my family, and actually my son, who's now 10, like he'd only seen some of the movies and stuff. So it was like, and Cheryl hadn't seen any of them, or Cheryl had seen a few of them, but she hadn't seen like Infinity Saga and stuff. So sitting and watching with all of them was kind of a really cool experience because, like, you know, you also see like how it was all stitched together, you know, how kept, you know. I know some of it wasn't all planned, but like you can just see that all the pieces were used, you know, from the past. Like even in the original Ant-Man, like the quantum realm stuff, like how that became so important. But it was like, you know, just kind of a third act, really, like just sort of a place to go in the third act. And then it became so instrumental to the whole story of it, like how those things were kind of planted early on. That was cool. And then also, like, yes, going back. Especially, and this also just gave me new appreciation for like his perspective on things, because like those battles, any of the battles he's in, especially the Civil War ones, where it's like one minute you're fighting Spider-Man and then you're fighting, you know, and then Vision is passing through you and then, you know, and then you're suddenly big and then, you know, like all this stuff is happening from every angle so fast, different sizes with like people you've idolized. Like, I'm just amazed at like the sort of recall he had. He was able to hold on to all those experiences, I think, and recount them, because again, like, so he's so grounded, like, that he can sort of, like, instead of just being overwhelmed by things, he just sort of stays who he is.
But a part of this book that I would have loved to see more of in the, I guess, historical documents such as Ant-Man 1 and Ant-Man and the Wasp, the sort of trial and error in him practicing and learning. Now, they have some of that in Ant-Man 1, but I really liked some of the details here, too, of like, I got a little scared. Okay, I'm big again. All right, I'm out. And yeah,
there's too many ants, I gotta be big.
Yeah.
And you know, one of my favorite Ant-Man moments in any of the movies was, I believe, the second one, when he's almost like not to proportion, where he's not small, but he's not big, so he kind of looks like a kid, except his appendages don't quite match. And that to me is the thing I'd be so terrified of, isn't so much the am I big, am I small, but rather, did I keep this massive head of mine large, and now it's on a very tiny little body, like a
character. Body self-consciousness, right.
Yeah, that would be stuff.
Again, MODOK seems to be fine with that, but.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we were having we were having a discussion over dinner, my sons and I, about MODOK. And one of them might have been less than positive about the effect of the face. And I said, no, that was exactly how MODOK should look. You know, like, yeah, MODOK's an effed up dude. And that face was perfect. And yeah, his sad goodbye was surprisingly managed to be hysterical and poignant. And that's a hard thing to balance, is something so broadly comedic. Yeah. That actually has a moment of emotion too.
It really was very touching. I think, as far as your other question about, like, you know, I tried to shed a little bit of light on that with, like, when he first is trying to learn to get the ants to respect him. That was a story that the world had not really seen before that he shared with me. And in some ways that was kind of a parallel to parenting as well, because, like, you know, ultimately it was like, you're this big, strong dude. You know, you can physically manhandle your kids, but you're not going to get them to love and respect you and, you know, be kids you have a good relationship with if you just, like, throw your weight around. The whole "because I said so" thing that, like, you know, 50s dads did, that doesn't really fly. It doesn't really lead to a good relationship. And you know, so he had to learn to sort of, you know, you can't quite be one with your kids, but you can sort of try to, like, get on their level and see things the way they do, I think. And that was sort of a thing for me. I think, you know, what was interesting too, that's peculiar to Scott, was there wasn't as much dwelling as you might have thought on the failures, the various experiments. He alludes to them a lot and stuff about how it was hard, you know, when he tried it out at Hank's lab. But I think that's just for his persona, is like, you know, if I did a tell-all about how hard it was being Ant-Man and how many times we effed up and everything, like, that's just not his vibe. Like, he's like, why live in, like, the negativity? He's like, I figured it out. Some of it sucked, but I moved forward and great things came out of that. I think that's sort of his, like, approach to life that he wants to share with us, I think, as opposed to, like, he could have really, like, spilled the tea on, like, you know, how many bizarre and terrible things he went through mastering the Ant-Man suit and stuff like that. But instead, he's a very looking forward kind of guy, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, there's so much positivity where he's even, you know, multiple times he mentions, like, boy, it would have been great to have, you know, not been in San Quentin for a couple of years, but then he wouldn't have met his best friend. Oh, I wish I hadn't gotten trapped in the quantum realm, but then because I did, I was able to come up with this idea, you know. So there's always, like, the, well, it happens for a reason, and boy, it was terrible at the time. And it's hard to imagine getting over just what really one of those things that he had to overcome.
Yeah, right.
Well, now he can hotwire a car. I think that, yeah, right? That's a great that alone.
I think, like, you had asked this question earlier. That was one of the things that struck me, was like, if it'd just been one, working with him, it's like, it'd just been one of those things that would have been, some people would have made a whole book out of just one of those things happening to them. Right. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob, I was curious. Sorry, Christian.
No, go ahead.
What did you learn from Scott?
I think I've mentioned some of them already. I think a little bit about the, like, that it's hard for me working as a Hollywood writer not to dwell on the past and not to dwell on, like, all the shitty, the could have beens, why didn't I get that? Why did that other person get that? You know, there's so many things that we all have those things in our past. I think if you work in entertainment, and that's something I need to work on, I think. And I think he, you know, his the things that happened have been, I hate to say outsized, have been so dramatic that I figured, like, if he can do that, like, then I think that's something that I can learn from as well. Just keep looking forward. I think, you know, also, again, like, as parents, sometimes we think of of course we love our kids, but also, like, sometimes they're the bane of our existence. Let's just be honest. Like, and, you know, that's because we've, you know, knock on wood, never had to be really disconnected or separated from our kids, or, like, not have them around, or just be isolated from them the way that Scott was a couple of times with Cassie. So I think you really appreciate, like, how important that bond is. I think I've appreciated that more with my own kids. Like, just feeling the poignancy of all the different times he couldn't be close to Cassie when he wanted to be, like, that just sort of made me able to tolerate, I think, you know, the rough waters that come a lot with, especially teenage daughter.
And I think that you know, again, it goes back to sort of the positivity, and, you know, when he talks about trying to make up for missed birthdays and, you know, the 4
well,
bounce houses.
He tries a little too hard, and I've certainly been guilty of that as well with my daughter as well.
Well, the big donut I think he made for her is one of the
Well, he said that's something that might have happened. He's very specific.
Can't confirm or deny.
No, he wouldn't use
no, but you were mentioning, Eric, like, so, like, when he missed a bunch of birthdays, he tried to, like, make them all up at once, like, with one mega birthday for a little girl when she was a teenager. And, you know, I've certainly been told that I'm trying too hard. Pretty recently.
Don't try so hard. Well, you know, Rob, obviously, you know, you spend so much time working on the book, and then it gets to be out there, and, you know, people kind of get to glimpse it for the first time and actually see that it's an actual book, you know, in the third Ant-Man movie, and, you know, Scott does some promotion for it. And it must have been exciting for you, but my understanding was that it wasn't apparent right away that it was a real book. And I don't think that you were saying right away that you had worked on it with him, because I remember you posting about something, and I was like, oh, and I think I even commented, I was like, oh yeah, it's going to be a real book. As they say, it's going to be out. And then, like, later I'm like, oh yeah, obviously he knew that, you know? So it must have been really fun for it to be in the movie. And you're like, you know?
Oh, it's even better. I took my son to the premiere of the movie, and in Quantumania, I remember at the very end, when finally, like, Hank is doing his due, and he goes, you know what? You're a hell of a writer, when he quotes something from the book. Yeah. And my son whispered, he said, he's talking about you.
Oh, that's great.
So that was pretty
Hank
satisfying.
Pym loves me.
I was just going to say, Hank Pym finally thinks that you're a writer. So yeah, that must have definitely must have been fun.
It's been really fun. It's been really fun. And yeah, I was sort of, I think, out of deference to Scott, to not draw attention from him, I was supposed to sort of, like, keep it under wraps for a while until the real book.
And that's why when I opened it, I was glad to see the fact that, you know, your name is there, you know, with Rob Cuttner, and not just, like, way in the back, you know, thanks to 100 people, and you're just there, you know, alphabetically with the case, you know, because
this was a discussion that we had, you know, so about how to do that. And so I think that was the compromise that ended on, like put him on the cover front and center, and then just sort of mention me.
Or is that you on his shoulder? Is that actually you?
Oh, that's a great question.
My friend photoshopped me in that exact thing for me. That was really,
that would have been great.
You can't tell him in the helmet, right? You seem very, I mean, I'm only seeing you from here up,
you can't see this on camera right now, but I'm super jacked.
Well, you know, while we're talking, and before I let you go, we're, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, it's not on the jacket for this, but Hank Pym thinks you're a great writer. So I wanted to give you a moment to talk about your other book, or at least another book, Snot Goblins and Other Tasteless Tales, which I believe you'll be making a very high profile elementary school appearance to talk about this book. Somewhere in the vicinity of where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah, who did you have to sleep with to line that up?
I
have a guess, but it might be wrong.
Somebody who brought me to four Emmys, but unlike some people, when they go to the Emmys, we didn't win any that I went to. But anyway.
Well, that took a turn.
Didn't you get anything from the lessons in this book, Christian?
I know. Look forward.
I wasn't going to get an Emmy no matter what. I just felt like I was bad.
Not with that attitude.
I didn't work on anything. That's true. Dennis Miller's CNBC show should have gotten an Emmy, but that's not what we're talking about.
Well, I worked on his HBO show, you know, before that, and it was after the streak of Emmys had ended. So like, same thing. And like, okay. They'd all been, well, everyone worked with it then.
Now I have to peel it back. My wife worked on Mad Men, and that's how I got to go to the Emmys. And the four times it didn't win were the ones we were at. So, you know, there's something to be said for that feeling of like, what's different in this room? Oh, it's Blatt. Me. Yeah, the Blatts are dragging everybody down.
Black Cloud is your new name.
Anyway, let's talk about Snot Goblins and Other Tasteless Tales.
Yeah, so this one I get to have my name on the front cover. And
somewhere in there it says with Scott Lang.
Scott Lang, yeah, just out of fairness.
Covered in snot at that.
Yes, exactly. Wow, I like that. That's a power zoom right there. So yeah, this is a book for kids, like elementary school age kids, and is a collection of five horror comedy tales, sort of horror tropes, like some mummies and vampires and ghosts and goblins and trolls. But they're all funny tales, and they're all like have a heavy element of like gross out humor. So they're kind of in the vein of like the Captain Underpants Dogman books, which both of my kids enjoyed very much and read over and over again. And I was very inspired by the kind of like reckless and I think very kid-centered humor of it. Like it's really like not just inmates running the asylum, but like kids' perspective on everything. Like adults are weird and suspect, and and also just like that sort of like, you know, almost forbidden quality of all the gross, gooey stuff that the adults turn their noses up. But kids just really revel in that because it's like them learning about the world. So these are just funny tales about, you know, obviously a snot goblin, like these creatures who live in your nose and come out and want to like create the mucus galactus, create a whole world of snot like this. It's just like just diving into all that stuff that I think my inner child never really left behind.
Yeah. And by the way, my son, who's eight, is a huge fan of Dave Pilkey, who is responsible for Captain Underpants. But specifically, yeah, he loves Dogman and the Kekkid Comic Club.
Yeah.
He always knows like how many, like eight, nine
when they're coming out, right?
He knows when the next one's coming out, which, look, I was always that way with, book series that I liked or, you know, what day the new comics were on the rack, you know, that sort of thing. I always knew that stuff, but and it's like, you know, sometimes I'll like, you know, he'll read me something from it and I'll see it. And it's like, it's very reminiscent of like Mad Magazine when we were kids, where it's like, it's, you know, it's subversive, it's gross, but it's not inappropriate for, you know, maybe it's inappropriate for like a 4-year-old, but at the same time, you're like, oh, it's just silly. It's just gross. And, you know, it's fun. And, you know, boogers are one of many functions of the body that kids are just, you know, since time immemorial have been fascinated by, you know.
Yeah.
So it is fun. And yeah, it definitely seems like you know, it's very much in that vein. So that must be fun to get to do that. And I know that over the years you've had some other books and some other stuff that you've worked on, and I know you're working on stuff for the future. So you're managing to keep busy, but obviously if you get a call from any of the Avengers, specifically Scott Lang, that you'll know that you need to answer it, you know. So
well, if Scott could answer the call, then so can I.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's you're never too busy for some heroing. Well, Rob, I really appreciate you taking the time, and I did enjoy reading that's right, Scott Lang, Look Out for the Little Guy, which, as the commercial that was released after the movie, Scott saying it's a real book, you know, and it is a real book. And I it took a little while because I think the movie was out in February, but it was very exciting. Oh, yeah. Look at that. See, because because I have the virtual background, I was afraid to try and show it off to the camera, but Eric is indeed showing off where Rob's name is there.
You got proof.
And, now the key will be somebody that can have that title page signed by both, you know, get the Rob Kuttner signature, get the Scott Lang signature, and then, you know, maybe figure out a way to get some ant footprints, you know, in some ink.
Oh, I like it.
I want Ansel Adams. That was, yes. By the way.
Oh, okay. You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. Ansel Adams was definitely a high point for me. Rob, I don't know if you want people to be able to find any social media websites, anything like that, please let us know. Otherwise, those are the books that we're talking about. Snot Goblins. And of course, look out for the little guy. If you choose to not be found on social media, that is also very much understandable.
So unsurprisingly, I'm at robkuttner.com. Updates you on all my projects and some of my past stuff. On X, I guess it's now called. My handle is Apocalypse Howl, which is the name of my first humor book. And so that's my Twitter handle. And then Threads and Instagram and all the other things.
And Apocalypse Howl was a while ago, right? Because I remember having you on Dennis Miller's radio show to talk about it. And so I remember from some time ago. And you know, it's funny how, you know, you said that's the title of your book, your first book, so that's your social media name. And I'm at Christian DMZ because that was the premium section of the Dennis Miller website was DMZ, and DMZ. He was Dennis DMZ. And it's like, I could have changed it a long time ago, but then it's like, well, people know me as that. And
yeah, you know, it's like, what's the point? Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. If I took over a major broadcast network and I could be Christian NBC, I would do it. But so far that hasn't happened. Although I don't know, Eric, maybe I should be Christian WATB promoting my show. Who Are These Broadcasters, which is on the Who Are These Podcasts Network, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And Eric, I always like to let people know where they can find you. And it's been a little while. Where can they find your movie?
Oh, my. Yes. Other Voices, still hanging around on Amazon, Looking for Love. Documentary, also known as Aswat Aherim, because it's fancy like that. You can find that on Amazon. And Count Eric Connor, Conner. It's where I hang out when I'm not watching Who Are These Broadcasters.
Thank you.
The most fabulous Christian DMZ podcast romp. Come and say hi. I'm there. I'm not so regular man, but I'm okay. And Rob, thank you again. Once again, your work with Scott Lang taught me a lot. I found myself very moved by this book. And then hearing both of you talk just makes me feel like in their husband rankings, I've gone down a little bit tonight, but that's okay.
You've got room to grow.
Yeah, exactly. I really don't.
That's the
important thing.
As big as I want to be. So
the important thing to keep in mind, Rob, is that you made Eric feel, which he's been broken inside the whole time I've known him. So it's like the Grinch, you know, his heart grew three sizes that day. Speaking of evil, we'll, as always, be back on Fridays as we talk about Loki. That's noon Pacific on Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern. So you'll see us for our next show right over there. That is all the time we have for now. Thanks again to Rob Kuttner, and thanks to Scott Lang for sharing his story with him and all of us. We will see you on Friday. And as the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.